on your behalf to veto the fourth and, I mean, the goal line play to Doug when it came to your headset?
No, it's a play we've worked. We've worked that play since he's been in there. And we've worked it, worked the mechanics of it, you know, the handoff to him. And we just got to do it better. It's just, you know, wedge blocking, and you're on the 1 yard line. You got a big guy getting the ball. And so we've practiced it a lot.
The logic of that call with the game on the line to give it to an offensive lineman, that you're on board with that?
It's a 1 yard play. It's a 1 yard play. And we felt that a big guy like that taking a dive could do that.
Under my thumb.
Very well done, Robbie. What? Are you ready?
I am ready. Yeah. Excuse me. Is this on?
Dan, if you're listening, turn the radio up.
Dan Bernstein, he's in therapy. I agree with what you said in transition that this might be better for him. Mm-hmm. It's really Danny Parkins, too. Danny Parkins, too. Like, look, at the end of last year, when the topic came up about whether to fire Matt Eberflus and bring in a new head coach or not, I was enthusiastic. I believed that Matt Eberflus had gotten buy-in from the team, and there were other people with me. I had supporters on this. I had former players who believed this. That Matt Eberflus had gotten buy-in from the team and had built something at a defense that played hard and was lockstep with Ryan Poles in a good way, and that as long as they nailed the offensive coordinator hire, that I was in favor of Matt Eberflus coming back. And let me take the opportunity right now at 4:02 p.m. on the 29th of October. Unlike Matt Eberflus so far after his errors on Sunday, I can point a thumb and be accountable and tell you, dear listener, I was wrong. And I regret that they did not find a new head coach at the end of last season and in the offseason. Because what we have now seen, and it's not just about a Hail Mary, it's not just about, you know, not overruling to, you know, his offensive coordinator, and it's about clearly a guy who talks about building culture but has not built culture. What kind of culture do you have when a player like Tyreek Stevenson is willing to do what he did? And what kind of organization do you have when you are not pointing a thumb at yourself and being accountable while six different players now have come out and pointed fingers at you, pointed fingers at other players, pointed fingers at themselves? And they're trying to rally the troops. The players are coaching you up and showing you how to be. You're 2.5 years in, and I was wrong. And I wish like hell that they had moved on from Matt Eberflus in the offseason. Because you know where you are now, Lawrence? These guys are toast. This coaching staff is toast. They have shown that they have not built something that is sustainable. And they're going to get through the year, and maybe they'll end up at 9-8 or 8-9, or we'll see where it ends up. But they're going to move on. The Bears, I think, are going to move on at the end of the year, and you're going to give Caleb Williams his second offensive coordinator in 2 years, which is what you wanted to avoid. And it could still work out. It worked out eventually for Justin Herbert. It worked out for Josh Allen. But you're going to have that classic Bears scenario of turnover here again after the quarterback's rookie year, because Matt Eberflus is not a leader. He is not a head coach. And I was wrong, and I wish I had advocated instead for a change in coaching at the end of last year.
I want to give you an opportunity to really think about this, though, before you fully point the thumb at yourself. And the reason is that it's very possible they win on Sunday. And it's very possible that they win the game after that.
Mm-hmm.
Am I going to be sitting here with you, with the Bears being 6-3, and you being like, everything's fixed, everything's fine? Because I don't want you to live in that space where you have now made this declarative statement about the coach, and it ends up being a positive thing that these things happen. They find themselves back in the playoff race. And then you're stuck going, I hope they fire the coach at the end of the year.
Well, and why would I be hoping that they fire the coach? To say that this pivot was right? To say that this opinion was right?
I think that...
This is how I feel right now today, and I need to admit that I was wrong.
I think your opinion on Eberflus is evolving, and that's good. I just don't think that you need to, at this moment, stake the ground of it.
Well, I was wrong, man. I wish I had advocated differently. I wish I had noticed what a lot of other people had noticed and what people around the league have been trying to tell me. I've had a couple different people have been trying to tell me since the hiring that the Bears screwed this up, that they screwed this up, and the stuff that I've referenced. You know, Trace Armstrong is the shadow president. The fact that Dan Quinn was about to get this job and did not all of a sudden because Ryan Poles alone came and decided to do what he did with Matt Eberflus.
Or that Ben Johnson was interested in this job had it become available.
I actually can do some reporting on that. Should I interrupt the take and do some reporting on that right now? Okay. I can tell you that was just a rumor that Albert Breer heard and shared on the radio, and it is not actually something that happened.
Okay.
I can share that with you right now. Yes, Chuck. Yes, Mr. Swirsky, that is sourced. I just got that information during the break, as a matter of fact. So that is not factually correct.
Is there anything that can happen between now and the end of the season that would make you change your mind on this?
I don't believe so. I don't think so, because the kind of pivot that we're talking about, the kind of evolution for Eberflus to suddenly become a guy that is accountable, and we'll talk about mistakes that he has made, and we'll put a little fear in guys. There clearly is no fear in these guys. They are being led by respect. They are being led by.
But isn't that
each other?
Isn't that a good thing, though? Like,
don't you need a little fear in football, Lawrence?
I don't know. I don't know in this day and age if you do. I wonder if and maybe fear is not the right word. Maybe accountability or consequences is. Mm. This is why I'm still stuck on this. Like, I know how I feel about Matt Eberflus as a head coach. Okay, but I'm stuck on whether or not. There can be evolution, which is why I look at what happened at the beginning of the season and I go, here's an example of the players saying what they need, those needs being met, and then them thriving in that moment.
Sure, that's good.
I think that is a positive thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, personally, I feel like this is getting ready to go badly, but I also understand. From the time that I was in locker rooms to where we are now, it's a different player that we're talking
about.
It is.
It's a different player. It's a different era of communication.
And
different
partnership.
Era. Yep, it is.
So
that's what Jalen said to us yesterday, that now it can just be like that. Okay.
So maybe some of the baggage that all of us come into when we think about, well, damn it, there should be a heavy punishment for Tyreek Stevenson because of the way that he acted and and me worrying about the fact that they did close practice yesterday, because this feels like the type of thing that you do when you're in crisis. This is what I've seen.
They are in crisis.
I agree with you.
They are in crisis, and I don't believe that this guy can lead them out of crisis. I do not believe that is something that he can do as a leader. I don't think he has what it takes in that regard. I think he still thinks like a defensive coordinator.
You know what?
And not as a head coach.
The worst part of like the glow up of Matt Eberflus is that it's cosmetic.
Correct.
Like
Correct.
That's the worst part of this is that it. I'm going to change the way that I appear. Does that also mean that you are changing the way that you go about doing the job? Have you learned anything that's going to allow you to be better at elements that are maybe more important than your public persona?
Hey, man, you're making my point.
I know, because I don't think
that he has. And in talking to people all year long as we have and watching this stuff, I don't think that he has. I think we've got a guy who is not comfortable being a hard ass with the players. He's not comfortable being hard with the players, and they need it. Some of them need it. Because some players don't need that, but some players absolutely do.
Figuring that out is a really difficult part of management and anything.
Absolutely.
Of who needs the kick in the butt versus who needs the hand around the shoulder.
And then having that club in your bag as a leader. I mean, we talk about this all the time with coaches. You gotta have that club in your bag. You gotta know which ones you can joke with and which ones you have to go after. And the head coach has to be able to do that and to put that fear of God into some guys. He's not comfortable doing that. I certainly do not believe he is comfortable doing that. And I'm troubled. I'm troubled by it. And I have people who I have talked to now for a couple years who said when it happened, they screwed this up. Wait till you see it. And here we are in an absolutely insane moment, as we've all been talking about, where the players are saying stuff and willing to talk about it because they know it needs to happen. The players are trying to coach up the coaches. This is pre-mutiny. This is mid-chaos and pre-mutiny.
It's weird that you say that, because that was actually a word that was thrown around by a veteran NFL reporter to me last night.
Mutiny? Yeah, and I'm calling it pre-mutiny right now. It's not quite there, but it is certainly chaos, and you can see mutiny from here.
Yeah, I can. I want to make sure that I try really hard to be fair. And on this show, you may hear me talk about things that aren't necessarily my opinion to try and make it fair, to make an argument for it. And this might be one of those times.
Okay.
One of the things that I'm wondering right now, I'm wondering if Ryan Poles is thinking about this too. If you do get growth over the next 10 games, because remember, there's 10 games left in the season.
I know, it's a lot.
Okay? If you get growth from your head coach and an understanding between coach and player, and things move in the right direction, and we get back to linear development for Caleb Williams, at the end of it, is it still better to make a move at head coach, knowing that that's going to mean another move at offensive coordinator? Is the continuity then a better move for Caleb if things are put back on the right track? Or does none of that matter? And maybe the healthiest thing for Caleb is move on to someone who's going to do right by him as a head coach and as an offensive coordinator.
It depends who your head coaching candidate is. And if it is an offensive mind, then you're going to let that person write their own ticket. If it's a defensive mind, maybe you'll talk about keeping Shane Waldron in the scenario that you paint. And Shane Waldron doesn't seem to have aspirations of being a head coach, and I don't think he'd get a lot of looks as a head coach.
I don't think that he's going to. I think for a little while they had discussed it in Seattle as that maybe being the succession plan, but then not really.
Yeah, but the very fact that we're talking about that scenario is part of the issue, obviously, in terms of the overall philosophy of having a defensive coach. But it can work. It can work as long as that coach is a true leader and a real badass.
But let's keep going here. If these are the things that we're saying about the head coach, then we need to talk more seriously about the decision-making of the general manager.
Absolutely, but let me make one more point on the head coach, because it's sometimes, you know, Lawrence, you and I both like this. It's long been my brand, but you and I share this. We look at the humanity of the people that we talk about. It's often for the good, but it's also for the flaws, because we're all flawed. We all have our issues, right? But I think as you're looking at Eberflus, you can tell what kind of dude he is, and you can tell what he's trying to prove. And I think he's trying to prove that he's perfect and worthy as a head coach, to the point that he can't accept that anything was his fault. He's trying so hard to show the world that he's more than just a defensive coordinator, because we all actually think he's just a defensive coordinator. He's trying so hard to prove it that he doesn't accept anything was his fault. He thinks accepting that and showing that is actually showing a level of weakness and incompetence, when the truth is, like the story I told in transition about Madden, about baseball managers, when you show people that you're capable of saying, I screwed up, it's actually a life hack, because it shows other people that you understand that everybody makes mistakes, and it makes them like you more. It makes them trust you more. And Eberflus doesn't have that.
I don't disagree with you on that, but it's possible that that's just who his public face is. It's possible that as we speak, he is doing that to his players. And that's why I keep going back to the thing that happened at the beginning of the year, where it's, you know what, guys, I hear you. Let's do this the right way. Let's go back up the chain of command. Let's talk with your OC about some of these issues. If you don't get satisfaction from him, I will talk to him. And then it gets fixed. This could just be a tightening of a managerial style by Eberflus. Speaks, I am with you. A lot of this stuff is super concerning to me.
Hey, Lawrence, do all those players saying what they said yesterday sound like they had a coach who admitted that he made a mistake, or did it sound like players desperately trying to point out some things they thought should have been changed?
It sounds like, to me, a bunch of guys that are leaders on the team saw stuff that was troubling. They didn't like how all of it felt. And they felt comfortable saying what they needed to say publicly, which I think is a gift for everyone. And it should be a gift for Matt Eberflus, too.
I should say, but
I'm curious on how he's going to take it, which is why, like, my spider senses are tingling about tomorrow. And I know that Jason said, look, they've kind of done this type of thing before. It is the middle of the season. They do have a lot of injuries. So maybe you are giving the guys a break with their bodies and stuff. But the timing of it just seems really dubious to me.
I agree with you, and because we know what a big moment this is. We know how close to crisis this situation is. And it's the second year in a row we've had this with this guy. Don't lose sight of that.
I haven't lost sight of it. That's why I keep bringing up the way that he handles preseason.
And that's why, Lawrence,
and that bothers me.
The fact that we were here after what? Week 5 last year? Week 6 last year? After all the coaches, two coaches had to leave the building, one under unbelievable scandal, and those were his hires.
That's on his watch, too.
And here we are now doubting the offensive coordinator hire again. And here we are looking at a situation where the players are having to step up. There's eight captains having to step up. It's a second year in a row where we've reached a status like this. That's why I'm comfortable pointing the thumb and saying, I was wrong, and I wish they had changed coaches in the offseason.
And what ends up being really scary is, what was it about Matt Eberflus that convinced Ryan Poles that he was the right guy to manage Caleb Williams' career? Now, if there had been an established OC in here with Matt Eberflus, so pick whatever name you want. Had there been someone that was already on the staff that you were like, this is the perfect person to bring the quarterback along, you can mitigate Matt Eberflus and go, he just needs to work on like the team building aspect, the sideline CEO stuff. And that, but if like it's a major strike, like I don't want to just stay with it just being Eberflus. It's a major strike against Ryan Poles, because you may have sacrificed a year of Caleb Williams to prove your point,
yeah,
that Matt Eberflus was the right guy to coach this
team.
To
stick by your guy for whatever reasons. And if you did the quarterback a disservice in the long run in that way, that would be a major, major problem.
I think back to what Jalen said too before the season started, and it wasn't with us, it was during a press conference. And he was saying how, yeah, you know, people, since I've been here, people have told me the teams are supposed to be good, and then they're not good. And he was dead serious about it. And I wonder if all of those guys, if you're Montez Sweat, if you're Jalen Johnson, If you're Keenan Allen and you're going, I know how things are supposed to be run, and I know what it looks like when it looks bad, and you're in the middle of this, it would be a shame to throw away a season of expectation.
For sure. And so we can point to polls, and you know we'll end up talking about polls. But right now, I see a head coach who is really more of a defensive coordinator than anything, doesn't think about using timeouts, thinks instead about calling cornerbacks up when he realizes there is a problem, and then doesn't own in the press conference the next day that he realized the corners should be up, even after he's the one on tape calling them up. That's handled wrong so many different ways, and he has not set up this team for success. So, second year in a row.
So look, I know that you've pointed the thumb. But the whole reason that I'm asking the question is a premature point. What if tomorrow you get Matt Eberflus at the podium saying, you know what? I talked with the guys. I watched the film.
Good.
I've thought about it, and that wasn't the right way that we should have handled
okay,
that.
Okay, well, then good for him. And that maybe that'd be better for this week, you know, and maybe it'd be better even for a few weeks, and it would have a lasting thing. But he clearly has not built something. He clearly has not built something that can be sustainable in the ways that we're talking about. And I won't believe that a pivot to that character trait is something that he can hold on to. That kind of thing takes work, man. That takes a while. You're going to change your character in that way, change what kind of person you are in that way, what you're comfortable doing.
Sometimes,
that's
though,
a big pivot, man.
When you get a moment like this where you are embarrassed to the level that the Bears have been embarrassed for the last 48 hours, maybe it can change. But I also want to go back a year in time. I brought this up yesterday, and I'll keep talking about it. There were plenty of people and people that I trust that felt, had he not won the Washington game last year, that was going to be the end. For the reasons that we've talked about, the idea that you were going to allow this person to handle the most important quarterback ideally in your franchise's history.
Yeah, the guy who's supposed to change the possible ceiling for everything you do for the next decade. And I think still can, by the way.
And I think that these are the types of moments where you can then look at the sliding door and you can go, oh, if Caleb doesn't work out, you kind of go back to these moments and you go, is that because of what happened in year one? Like the things that we were talking about with Justin Fields, and like the things we were talking about with Mitchell Trubisky, did they put him on a bad path that made it impossible for him to reach his ceiling? These are the things that are troubling overall and need to be discussed. Next. I know you have two thumbs, so you can then point at another thumb in a couple of weeks if you change your mind.
No, but I'm not. Don't give me an out here to change my mind. I have changed my mind once. My feeling has evolved. I was wrong.
You've changed your mind twice because you have the Bears beating the Packers twice, too.
Well, maybe that'll still happen.
If that happens, they can't fire him.
I don't know. They could.
They could.
But listen, you're conflating what they end up doing with what I think they should do, okay? If they decide to keep him and Ryan Poles fights for him because he believes in him in some way that doesn't make sense to me, that doesn't change my opinion. I'm telling you what I think they should do. Don't conflate what I think they should do to what they will do.
We will talk about Spiegs' least favorite team in the NFC North, the Green Bay Packers, and how they keep winning.
They're vulnerable.
Next here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on The Score.
McManus, for the second straight week, a Green Bay Packers game-winning field goal.
No, God!
So the Packers don't even need their quarterback to win games. They are able to take a quarterback that a lot of people had given up on. The Tennessee Titans, in fact, had given up on for Will Bleeping Levis.
Yeah, Malik,
and they're
Malik
able
Willis.
To win games with him as their QB.
Yeah, they seem to have done a very nice job.
Did you notice that over the weekend?
I saw that
they were. They were able to win. That you're looking and you see the groin injury for Jordan Love and go, oh, this is the part where things start to decline for the Packers. And then they're able to rally, and Malik Willis makes a big throw in the game to secure the win and set up the field goal for them.
Yeah, to Jaden Reed, man. They got a big pile of young wide receivers in like year two and year three. There's so many of them. Dobbs and Reed and Christian Watson. And there's Bo Melton, right? I mean, they have so many of them. They're really good at scouting and finding that. And then they're really good at developing quarterbacks and everything. And they seem to, you know, they're pretty good at defense and, you know, all that stuff. And yeah, I'm in a weird spot, man.
You are in a weird spot.
I'm in a weird spot. I called that the Bears were going to sweep the Packers last week. And now I've admitted my mistake and said that I want them to change the head coach. Those two things could be true together. Those things could live together. But I'm not going to root to be right on stuff. I mean, I'm just going to watch what happens and we'll see what happens. I'm just, I'm saying what I believe.
Like you want to call BS on that.
You don't want to root to be right? I root for myself to be right all the time.
Yeah.
I root for you to be right too.
Oh, that's nice of you. I mean, like, it'd be cool. It'd be cool to be right. You know, but I'm not going to let that guide me as completely.
I just wouldn't root for yourself to be wrong. So I think you should root for yourself to be right.
Well, the good news is I'm going to root for the Bears to sweep the Packers because I was going to root for that anyway. You know, I am going to root for the Bears to move on from Eberflus because I wish they had.
Which
done
one
that
do you want
off-season.
More? I think that's pretty obvious, but
it's just that if they like the math starts to math a little bit, mm-hmm. if they were to sweep the Packers and. Let's give them a 50-50 chance because it's like what a one and a minus one and a half line so far. Let's say they win the game.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna pick them to beat the Patriots, right? That makes six.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Now you have a sweep of the Packers.
Which will give you eight.
That's eight.
Mm-hmm.
If you split with Minnesota and you've already been able to split with Detroit.
Hey Lawrence, if they go 10-7, I still want them to move on from Matt Eberflus. Okay.
That'll be an interesting place for you to be.
That'd be fun.
That'd be cool. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm not.
You seem to be saying that I'm wrong. I can take it.
I just want to point out.
You've got a condescending smile on your face.
I just want to point out that it will.
If you were Dan Wiederer, I would call you a condescending piece of crap. Okay?
No, you wouldn't. But my thing is that
I mean I might
in the 5 weeks that we've been doing the show.
Yes,
I see how emotional you get about things.
Uh-huh.
If this scenario that we're talking about plays out, you're going to be in a logic and emotional pretzel.
No, I'll be all right.
No, you won't.
If they sweep the Packers, and they go 10-7,
okay.
I will still be wanting to get rid of Matt Eberflus.
Okay, I'm just waiting for the show meeting. Guys, look at this great job that Eberflus has done rallying the troops of this team. Mm-hmm. They have really matured, guys, and we need to acknowledge that as a show. I am waiting for that segment to happen.
Okay.
Because that's probably what's going to happen if those two things line up with each other. You're going to walk in here, mm-hmm. you're going to have a salad, and you're going to be like, guys, I got this big salad that costs $30. And let me tell you about these Bears. I'm so pumped about what the Bears have done and how Eberflus turned it around.
Let me ask a question. You think the salad is connected to the evolution of my feelings? You think the salad is connected? Like, if I was having a mac and cheese, then...
I want that chicken thing that you had.
The
not chicken parmesan.
Yeah. I know chicken parmesan when I see it. You know? Don't sell me some Spanish dish called chicken a la horno. When it's
really just chicken parmesan.
It's breaded chicken with white cheese and tomato sauce that you put in the oven. I know what that is. All right, well, I look forward
to the logic pretzel.
Well, sure.
We should get pretzels that day. That would be awesome.
That's fine. Let me take a note. Find something where Lawrence is inconsistent.
There's a lot.
Expose that and point out his pretzelness. Okay, good. I wrote it down.
I like pretzels. When we come back, let's do a little World Series.
Let's
Our guy Stephen
that.
Nelson is calling the World Series. We'll talk with him about Dodgers Yankees tonight here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
I'm just saying, Lawrence, you were saying some stuff last week, if my memory is correct.
That's why Danny left.
Afternoons on The Score.
Throwing up one last dose of hope. 2-2 to Torres. Bouncing ball towards the middle. Edman with a spin and a throw. And the Dodgers dominate game three. They're a win away from a world championship.
It has been a one-sided World Series so far, and the Yankees have an opportunity to stave off being swept tonight in the Bronx. Our guy, Steven Nelson, who people who are Score listeners will recognize his voice, has done all sorts of stuff locally, is the biggest White Sox fan in the world. But he's also the Dodgers broadcaster, and he joins us now here on Spiegel and Holmes. What's up, my guy?
Hey, Loho, always great to be with you, brother. Matt, great to audibly meet finally. Congrats to you and Loho on this new chapter at the Score. How are you guys doing?
Hey, Steven, thanks so much for that, man. Yeah, great. We're doing well. Congrats on the run, and Lord knows this series might end tonight. But I always smile when I hear you pop up on a condensed game or whatever. You're sounding great. What has it been like? What has it been like to sit above in that catbird seat and watch this team play this well for 84 games of this postseason?
Well, I appreciate you saying that. One, two, gonna have to get your ears checked. but it has been an amazing ride. Like, it just for me, like again, I've weaseled my way into this thing. It's like the fly on the wall for this postseason run. You know, doing radio for the first time since I was in college this year, and I have the utmost respect and a full heart for my beloved Chapman University Panthers. But doing Chapman baseball and doing Dodger baseball and then the postseason, two wildly different things. So I'm just trying to not suck as much as I normally would and kind of reduce the learning curve as fast as I can. But this team is a ton of fun. It does have a different feel to the Dodgers teams that I think everybody has in mind from the last decade, during this dozen-year stretch where they've won a lot of regular season games but haven't been able to put it together for the postseason. You know, this team is a lot more fight and resilience, and I think they've really endeared themselves to the fan base and helped a lot of Dodger fans out there fall back in love with the game as they've gone on this great stretch.
What was Friday night like?
Oh, my God. I would love to recount it fully, but I'll be honest with you, Loho, I just blacked out and screamed. Not entirely sure what I said on the air, so I can't be held responsible for it. The way I can put it is this. Anybody who's born after 88, which I was born in 89, and, we listen to stories from our fathers or parents or grandparents, uncles, whoever, talk about what it was like when Kirk Gibson went deep off Dennis Eckersley in Game 1 of the 88 World Series. Now, the subsequent generations have a similar story. It was Gibson-esque. It was just an unbelievable moment. I haven't been a part of anything like that in any sport at any point in my career, and I don't think I ever will again. It's all downhill from a walk-off grand slam in the World Series. But just trying to take ourselves back to where we all were Friday night, kind of building up. It was the last day of building up the hype and anticipation for the first Dodger-Yankee World Series since 1981. And really from that one swing, a first-pitch fastball down and in from Cortez, and Freddie absolutely tattooed it, it has been a totally different series. That was like a Mike Tyson punch to the stomach, and it took all the air out of New York's lungs, and they haven't gotten it back since, and they're still trying to find their breath. So that's the best way I can sum up that moment. I mean, for Freddie Freeman to not have an extra base hit the entire postseason and then to now have homered in three straight World Series games is pretty ridiculous when he is severely hobbled and also playing through some other stuff. So he's a legend.
Well, that's kind of where I wanted to go next. The story's been told a little bit here and there inside of the playoffs, but for the fan that's going to tune in tonight because maybe they'll see a sweep, what's been going on with Freddie Freeman? What has been his story this season and this postseason?
It's important context to keep, Loho, because this has been a year from hell for Freddie and his family, to be quite honest. It goes back into the regular season when his youngest son, Maximus, he and his wife, Chelsea, they have three boys, Charlie, Brandon, and Maximus. Well, Maximus fell really ill, and they didn't know what was wrong with him. And it got so bad that Freddie, the Dodgers were in Houston, had to fly back. And Maximus was kind of on the edge there. It was touch and go, and ultimately he was diagnosed with Guillain-Barré syndrome, GBS, which is just like a devastating nervous system. I don't even know how to describe it, but it's awful. You know, and he's 3 years old, and he's had to relearn how to do everything. You know, his just body shut down. And so, you know, he missed time, obviously, with that. And it's not like, oh, he was off for a few days. He's just, he's not sleeping in the hospital, right? Like, that's time away from baseball, but it's not time off. It was, if anything, time on, way more stressful, far more stressful than any baseball game could ever be. So then that happens. And then when they clinch the National League West against the Padres in that ultimate, penultimate regular season series, at the very end of that game, Freddie was stepping on the bag trying to avoid a tag at first base, and his foot was basically perpendicular with the line, and then when he hopped off, it just rolled over. And we don't have to be a professional athlete. Any of us who tried to play pickup basketball, you sprain your ankle, you're cooked. And so an injury that should have kept him on the injury list for 4 to 6 weeks, he tried to squeeze into 9 days. And so he's been taping that up like you would see a football player on Sundays. And again, you know the old thing at this point. This time of year, nobody's healthy. Nobody's close to 100%. For Freddie Freeman, that's especially true.
Talking with Steven Nelson of the Dodgers broadcast booth here as they're on the precipice of winning the World Series. Dave Roberts is about to do something nobody's ever done, which is to win a World Series while using at least four pitchers in every game. It's a different time. It's a different universe. Tonight's a bullpen game. I mean, it's crazy. And it even for a team with a payroll like that and big money people, et cetera, has he mastered this kind of thing? Like, is this a coronation season for Dave Roberts if and when they finish this one out?
Yeah, if he were to do that, it certainly would be a legacy cementer for sure. Because, at this point, what can you say? Obviously, there have been critics since 2020 and, critical of the 60-game shortened season, even though any player or coach that went through that will tell you in many ways it was more grueling with all the protocols and the COVID world that we were all living in back then. But anyway, if they were to finish the job here, he'd have his second world championship. And the job that he has had to do, he and his staff all year, in conjunction with the front office, to overcome a dozen guys on the injury list from a pitching standpoint. And not just just guys. These are dudes. Hall of Famers. Clayton Kershaw, not pitching. Tyler Glasnow, not pitching. Gavin Stone, who was their best pitcher all year, not pitching. Dustin, the list goes on and on and on. So it has had to be by committee. It has had to be this overworked bullpen that features a handful more Dodger reclamation projects, guys they pick up off the scrap heap and turn into dudes again. It has had to be those guys. It is the unexpected postseason breakout of Walker Buehler on the heels of a second Tommy John, Jack Flaherty and Yoshinobu Yamamoto, both dealing with their own physical ailments. So, for him to keep this team afloat, when Tyler Glasnow went down, I think that's the biggest story. The Dodgers were in Atlanta down the stretch of the regular season. Tyler Glasnow, it was announced that he was going to be done for the year. And the Dodgers at the clubhouse, as a team, they were down. And I think they were mentally and emotionally out of it. And they had a team meeting that night and to try and reinstall belief in themselves and self-confidence that they could do it despite all the talent that they didn't have. They were going to lean and trust in the talent that they still do have. And so, I think it's just been a masterful job by Doc and company, and he really deserves his flowers this year.
I've been meaning to text you this question, but I guess I'll ask it here on the 50,000 Watt radio station.
We'll do it live.
We'll do it live then. What's this like?
You're with me, Leather.
What's this like personally for you to be in the same space calling games where Shohei Ohtani is making magic happen? Like, with your personal story, what's this like for you to be in this?
Yeah, it's surreal, Loho. I mean, you know how much the representation means to me, you know, being a Japanese American, Asian American broadcaster, and so to now have, you know, a baseball avenger in Shohei Ohtani to watch every single day, and Yoshinobu Yamamoto and the extreme talent that he possesses, just the lightning rod that they have formed for this team, for this organization, and really for the sport as a whole. We've all seen those mind-boggling viewership numbers in Japan, and so it's just really cool, you know, to see my mom and my dad and my family engaged the way they are with the sport. You know, family members who didn't really give a damn about baseball are now just locked in, living and dying with every pitch, because it's just brought our community together in a really cool way. And then if I were to take a step back at a more macro level, just, the, you know, this World Series in particular with the Dodgers and the Yankees, and I know there's going to be some folks out there who want to roll their eyes at this, might sound a little too mawkish, but when you have, you know, these two organizations, you know, global brands, quote unquote, and you have global superstars, like, this, the impact that this series could have, right? Just thinking about all the kids, the young kids, boys and girls huddled around TVs in Japan, or all the boys and girls who are huddled around TVs in the Bahamas watching Jazz Chisholm, the first Bahamian-born player to be in the World Series in forever. The DR with Juan Soto and Teoscar Hernandez. Venezuela with Miggy Rojas and Bruce Dar Gratterol. Puerto Rico with Kike Hernandez. So on and so forth, right? Like, that is a really special thing to think about. And, you know, yeah, it just gives me a lot of hope and optimism, puts a smile on my face as, you know, I try and think about the future of baseball.
Thanks so much, Steven. This has been a pleasure, man. Thanks for making time on game day. Enjoy it tonight. And no offense, but I hope the Yankees take the next three and we at least get a game seven. I don't want to say goodbye to the season yet. You know?
Hey, Loho speaks. I totally understand. Look, what I can't promise you, no one's going to be celebrating in the corner of the end zone before the final out.
Tyreek Nelson, what a pleasure to talk to you.
Appreciate you guys. Be well.
Thanks. God, we had a respite for like 9 minutes.
Steven's great, man.
Took us right back.
I love that he's getting to do this. It's pretty amazing.
And he does sound great, man, on the highlights. It's very cool.
And he is the world's biggest White Sox fan.
We got to get to Caleb. We've barely talked about the quarterback who we've focused so much on for this Bears season because of all the kerfuffle about everything else.
Yeah, let's talk about Caleb next here on The Score.